K-Mud Podcast presents.
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes. Again, good morning. I welcomed with Lunar Drive, a great traditional word from their great CD, All Together Here. And before I start, I just want to let everybody know that at 10 a.m., a Women on Wednesday, DJ Anya is going to be here, and she's going to be talking with people that are on the Armada fleet that's going to Gaza. There's like 3,000, you know, people all going at one time to try to have some kind of effect. So if you're interested in that issue, make sure you keep your ears tuned to the mud for Women on Wednesday with DJ Anya. Well, a lot has happened in Indian country in this past week. The Paisala mining that's happening in the Black Hills, Three different organizations have asked for an emergency stop order. The Apache Stronghold, again, has filed another lawsuit trying to keep their sacred lands out of the hands of foreign copper mine companies that are going to destroy sacred areas. Not stopping. We're not stopping. All the courts in the world and all the corporations can do, think they have the control. But it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop the indigenous people. And for these past two weeks, including this one, the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is happening. My friend Tony Gonzalez from AIM West is there with Jimbo and a few other people. Getting updates, but I want to share with you what Brenda Norell from Censored News has written, because it gives a real update. And there's a reason why she doesn't name the people who are speaking. And you'll understand when I begin this, sharing this article, because the smoke screens are exposed as Indigenous people call out the systematic racism and violence and the terrorism of extractive industries. And again, this is from Brenda Norell of Censored News. And she says, Christina Bautista was murdered after she testified at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. A young Native Hawaiian family ran for their lives from the fires in Hawaii as their ancestral homeland burned to the ground. In the Mekong Delta of Vietnam, Buddhist monks and women rights defenders are imprisoned, and the government of New Zealand is imprisoning Maori women and stealing the future of Maori children. With the fire of their words, Indigenous people peeled back the hypocrisy of the governments of the world at the United Nations, revealing the false guarantees of governments who claim to be upholding Indigenous rights. For the Indigenous youth in Mexico, Colombia, and all the South, testimony at the United Nations Permanent Forum has meant imprisonment or death. Quote, our sister Christina Bautista participated in this forum shortly before being murdered and for defending autonomy, and is present, an Indigenous rights defender from Tijuana, Mexico, told the UN Permanent Forum. Quote, before being murdered recently, our brother Marcus Aguilar Rojas, who is an Indigenous authority, helped build an autonomous health clinic for the community. And speaking during the first week of the two-week session, she described how in Chiapas, the Mayan Zapatistas have developed their own autonomous health system over the past 30 years. When Indigenous communities build their own autonomous health systems, she said they are attacked with violence. Who protects us, but not if not ourselves? The state is silent. Where do we turn? She said the killings are driven by extractive interest and lithium mining. These acts of violence carried out without free, prior, informed consent and systematic racism. I speak today with grief, but conviction. In the heart of the Pacific, the New Zealand government ignores the violence perpetuated on Maori women and girls. The government of New Zealand is not progressing with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. They are carrying out a race-based agenda and under-reporting abuse. M. Haley Kutai Walker told the forum, quote, the incumbent right wing is disempowering my people. The plague and the rage of colonization since the 1800s continues to sicken her people. Maori women comprise 63% of the prison population, despite representing only 8% of the population. The government has abandoned prison reduction targets. Generations of babies are disconnected from their lineage in state care by the government. The lack of trust in police and the fact that Maori women are disbelieved indicate the severe underreporting of abuse. Quote, hear the cry of my people. And speaking for the independent nation of Hawaii, De Andre Makakoa's powerful words described how he ran with his pregnant wife and son to escape the fires, fires enabled by the theft of sovereign land and precious water. Makakoa described the illegal overthrow of the sovereign nation of Hawaii by the United States and the theft of land and water that now imperils his people with fires and floods. If there was free, prior, and informed consent, his homeland would be flourishing right now. Makakakoa said his people do not need AI, artificial intelligence. They need ancestral knowledge. Pele Akayakona of the delegation said in his statement, quote, I stand with you as a native representative of an occupied sovereign nation whose overthrow in 1893 remains unremedied under international law. Many know our homeland as the 50th state of the United States. We know it as the nation of Hawaii. I am also here today representing my hometown of Lahaina, which in August of 2023 was devastated by wildfire. It was once the capital of the Hawaiian kingdom, but now has a reputation as the place where the deadliest wildfire in the United States history took place. More than 13,000 people were displaced and scattered overnight, including native Hawaiian families, immigrants, and multi-generational households. On that day, over 100 people lost their lives, and many are still not home. Quote, Now we are not here to represent just a single town, but Lahaina's tragedy is an opportunity for the world to see what happens when the fate of our home is out of our hands. And despite our efforts, the pattern continues. In this fragile landscape, there are now floods and fires. Quote, in both cases of flood and fire, we were left to fend for ourselves by the occupant that has created the conditions we are forced to live in. Central African cattle herders told of their hungry and lean cattle killed and their cattle herders kidnapped and tortured for ransom. The Central African Network told the UN Permanent Forum, quote, the loss of 1,300 cattle not only represents economic devastation, but a direct threat to our cultural survival. Cattle herders are killed, their animals poisoned, and there's no effective response. In Ecuador, the rivers are filled with metals from oil and gas drilling. Indigenous Quechua in the Amazon said the government of Ecuador is using the United Nations Permanent Forum as a, quote, smokescreen while it mutilates Mother Earth. Quote, the government is promoting oil projects on indigenous territories. Ecuador must stop the explosives that are used to clear the land, Quechua elders told the forum. And from the Mekong Delta in Vietnam, Emily Hang pointed out, quote, health is not just the physical and mental well-being of indigenous peoples. It is the interconnectedness of our culture, spirituality, our land, and our environment with our physical bodies and mental state. The delegation of the Khmer Krum people in Vietnam said Buddhist monks are imprisoned, and one of the women human rights defenders is now in prison for organizing a Women's Day celebration. And the most vulnerable indigenous people from around the world made it apparent that they are not naive. They know their testimony each year at the UN Permanent Forum is not resulting in protection for their people. On behalf of the Khmer Krum people in Kampuchea Krum of the southern Mekong Delta in Vietnam, I come to you today to highlight how the health of the Khmer Krum people is being undermined by economic pressure, environmental degradation, state repression, and extreme exclusion from decision-making, Hang told the forum. Quote, being a community of indigenous farmers means that our livelihoods are dependent on the well-being of our land. Quote, however, our agricultural practices built on our ancestral knowledge are forcibly erased due to exhaustive export-driven rice production that pollutes our water and soil with chemicals and fertilizers. Physically, our bodies are overworked and abused, and the food and water we consume to replenish our spirit is poisoned. Quechua leaders spoke to the UN Permanent Forum on the International Day of Mother Earth, resounding how the health of the people is affected in places of conflict. Quote, our lands are being encroached by large-scale mining and oil exploration without prior consent. They are polluting our waters and contaminating our food, perpetuating the health problems, Quechua elders told the forum. They are permanently encroaching on our way of life. Hundreds of Quechua leaders are being interred with. Quote, our leaders' bank accounts are being frozen just because they are defending life on our land. We need to foster the health of Mother Earth if we want to foster the health of the people. Quechua leaders said the government of Ecuador is not telling the United Nations how it is undermining the rights of people. Quote, in reality, they are using this as a smokescreen to cover up their lack of efforts to fight climate change. And while Ecuador is accelerating its illegal mining, Quechua elders said, quote, more than 100 leaders have been tried for unjust embezzlement and accounts have been closed. Quechua urged unity and persistence and said the ongoing fight for Mother Earth must prevail. UN Special Rapporteur for Indigenous People, Dr. Albert Barum of the Democratic Republic of the Congo responded, quote, Indigenous people are being killed and are under arrest. Many live in hiding. It is because their land is not protected. Quote, they are vulnerable. And this is Latin America. This is Africa. This is Asia. This is across the world. Those lands are often occupied by drug traffickers, terrorist groups, and criminal activities, Dr. Barum told the forum. Governments are making conditions worse and increasingly volatile. Quote, the action of the states is to send in more military, more security, more police. Calling on governments to shift this paradigm, he pointed out that indigenous peoples are being considered accomplices and terrorists.
One earth, one people, one love. One earth, one people, one love. One earth. One people, one love. One earth, one people, one love.
First off, let's define indigenous, the native people, original inhabitants, living on every single continent. Then somebody shows up and says, I discovered it. How can you discover somewhere already found or take credit for a place that's already around, like Hernan Cortez or Hernando de Soto, Ponce de Leon or Francisco Pizarro? It all started with Christopher Columbus, Europe's obsession with Western discovering, with big dreams. It's while an Italian was searching for gold in the East Indies Islands. Long ago, 1492, we all know the story, he sailed the ocean blue. But here's what I didn't learn in school. After landing in the Bahamas, he treated people cruel. The Tainos are peaceful people. In Cuba, Haiti, DR, Jamaica, Puerto Rico. Even though they welcomed him with open arms, he committed genocide and unspeakable evil. I wish that's where the story ends, but colonization is a sickness that spreads. Speaking of sickness, literal diseases, smallpox, chickenpox, then the measles. I wonder how history would change if explorers were peaceful when they came, learned native customs, cultural exchange, didn't force religion, and no one was enslaved. Aztecs, Incas might have lived longer from South America to Canadian borders, Cherokee, Sioux, Apache, and Navajo, Iroquois, Chippewa, Choctaw, Pueblo.
Show love to the indigenous ones from ancestors to those still alive.
Sing.
One earth, one people, one love.
People of the earth.
One earth, one people, one love.
It's time to stand together.
One earth, one people, one love.
One earth, one people, one love.
One love.
Stand together as one.
One earth, one people, one love.
One earth, one people, one love.
One earth, one people, one love.
My sisters, my people, your people, all people.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that was Future with some help from Amir Lakoti of the Navajo Nation, indigenous people. I'm going to share with you just an incredible story, and I'm going to play the audio from the trailer that she's talking about, the movie that she made. And this is from Brandy Marin of the Cree Nation. She's from Canada, she just writes incredible articles. If you go to Substack, you can just find some incredible, incredible stuff. And I'm just so happy that I found her. And I've read other things of hers before, but now I have a more direct approach. But she just a few days ago released this, and I just thought I'd share it with you because, as she says, we were wounded, we rose, and the world deserves to witness this. And she says, take a breath, a real one, then watch the trailer for all these things that wounded you. The documentary I made alongside my extraordinary gifted cinematographer and editor and co-director, Gordy Day, and Two Canoes Media. It's hard to watch. I need you to know that going in, but hard things deserve to be witnessed. Lord knows our people have known that truth longer than anyone. One important thing, the trailer is nearly 9 minutes long. There's a brief pause partway, though, where it may feel like it ended, and it hasn't. Hold on. Stay with it. All of it. This film has lived inside me for 4 years, and today, for the first time publicly, I'm sharing it with you. 4 years ago this month, I was in Rome. I was there as a journalist. Yes, press credentials, notebook, camera, but I also was there as a granddaughter, as a woman who has carried the weight of her Kokum's silence her entire life, the weight of what she endured in one of Canada's Indian residential schools and never fully spoke about. I was there as someone who spent years sitting with survivors, holding their testimonies, letting their grief move through me and onto the page so the world could not look away. That April in Rome, Pope Francis issued his first apology to Indigenous delegates. Then in July of 2022, he came to us. He came to our land. I followed him across Canada. The days were long. The emotional weight was crushing in ways I still don't have full words for. At the powwow arbor in Mashawax, Alberta, sitting on a raised stage, he spoke the words survivors had been waiting for. Quote, I'm deeply sorry. The response from the survivors was a sigh of relief, followed by tears and hugs. Then the tour brought him to Lac Saint Anne, my homelands, Treaty 6 territory, the place where my Holcomb had been born and not far from, where she, my mother, and I all joined past pilgrimages. It felt like a full circle moment, although Cohen had not lived to see this day. My mother, who previously wanted nothing to do with the Pope or the Catholic Church, came at the last moment. For Cohen, she said. Tears of healing streamed down my mother's face as she spoke of her forgiveness for what was done to our people. And as I sat on the sand, the Pope just feet away from me, I felt Cohen's spirit. To call it a professional, personal, powerful, full circle moment is an understatement so vast it almost makes me laugh and cry both at once. But I also saw the cracks. In Quebec City, survivors and their families seemed to fade into the background while politicians arrived with their entourages, and the whole thing felt less like penance, more like spectacle. One survivor told me she felt like a, quote, Christmas ornament, that she didn't belong there. Quote, it's not about the survivors, she said. And the apology itself, and meaningful as it was, carried gaps that could not be ignored. Pope Francis spoke of abuses carried out by, quote, members of the Catholic Church, rather than clearly naming the institutional role of the Catholic Church itself. He failed to explicitly name all forms of abuse, omitting mention of the sexual and spiritual violence that survivors so courageously brought to light. And perhaps most importantly, his apology lacked a clear action plan for justice, reparations, or long-term reconciliation. There has been some movement. The Vatican formally repudiated the Doctrine of Discovery in 2023, an important but symbolic move rejecting the colonial era justification for land disposition. That needed to happen, but repudiation on paper means nothing without dismantling the structures it built. The Catholic Church has yet to fully return indigenous artifacts held in the Vatican Museum. Church records, the intake and discharge ledgers, the evidence of what happened to our children, remain difficult or impossible to access, and many survivors still wait for explicit financial reparations that go far beyond a $30 million fund spread across a country of millions. The work is not done. It has barely begun. And yet, here we are, 4 years later, and Canada is going backwards. It enrages me, and then it breaks my heart open. A growing and emboldened movement of residential school denialists have been waging coordinated assaults on our truth, showing up at universities, targeting institutions dedicated to the history and memory of what was done to our children, harassing survivors and their supporters. They wrap themselves in the language of free speech and academic freedom. What they are actually doing is desecration. They are trying to bury children who are already buried once, and this time they want to bury the memory of them too. Pope Francis, I want to honor you for what you did. You were an old, frail man in a wheelchair who traveled to the ends of this country, to our lands, to look our people in the eye and say, I am sorry. I am ashamed. From the bottom of my heart, that mattered. It healed something in people that has been broken for generations. It healed something in me. You declared on the world stage that what happened to our children was genocide, and the ground shifted. We felt it. I felt Cohom's spirit in that moment, in Rome and in Waxis and at the sacred waters of Sainte-Anne. Thank you. We will not forget what you gave us. That legacy now belongs to Pope Leo XIV, and so I write today with a direct and urgent call. The work cannot be left unfinished. History will not be kind to the Catholic Church if it treats the 2022 apology as a closing chapter rather than an opening one. True reconciliation demands more than words spoken on Indigenous land, however historic and however moving those words were. It demands the full release of church records so families can know what happened to their children. It demands the return of sacred artifacts that belong to our people, not to museum cases in Rome. It demands ongoing financial reparations that reflect the true scale of institutional harm. It demands that the Catholic Church activity and loudly defend Indigenous peoples when denialists come to tear down the truth, not observant silence. And it demands the full, unconditional repudiation of the doctrine of discovery, not just in a statement, but in every policy, every land dispute, every legal proceeding where its shadow still falls. As the late Senator Murray Sinclair said, quote, it took seven generations to create the harm through the residential schools. It will take a few generations to turn it around. That is the long road. We do not flinch from long roads. We were built for them. This film, All These Things That Wounded You, is my witness. Gordy's witness, the witnesses of every survivor and intergenerational survivor who trusted us with their truth and their tears and their extraordinary resilience. It was made with my whole heart and is being shared with you for the first time today, 4 years after I stood in Rome and felt Cohom's spirit move through me like wind off Treaty 6 waters. If this trailer moves you, please connect us to investors, to funders, to anyone with the heart and the means to help us bring this documentary to the world it deserves to reach. And I just want to interject here. You know, I used to go to Sundance Film Festival for many years. I would see all these documentaries. And if this played there, it would win every award. It's just incredible. And again, I'm going to share the audio with you. But to continue, She says, I'm exceedingly grateful to the survivors, to the intergenerational survivors, to everyone who said yes to this film when saying yes took courage. All things and these things that wounded us, they did not finish us. They made us the ones who remember, the ones who refuse to let the world forget, and the ones still standing, still speaking, still singing the names of the children who never came home. Brandy. And again, I'm going to share the audio. It is just, I wish you could see the pictures, but the audio also says it very much.
Of residential school survivors for years and years. I have been to their homes. I have walked with them through grave sites, where they helped dig the graves for their fellow classmates. This is all coming full circle. Traveling to the Vatican, to Rome, where colonization was literally born.
So I'm here with residential school survivors that are having a series of meetings with Pope Francis.
In one sense, I'm completely overwhelmed, you know, to be here because it is such a stunning place filled with incredible history, but the contrast of the violence too that it represents.
I said, I want to hear three words from you. I am sorry. It's significant to, for me anyway, to acknowledge the power of forgiveness. Because once that happens, then people will begin to feel a sense of healing.
In that time that he was listening to survivors, and as he was listening to their stories, you could see that he could feel pain. And you could see it on his face.
Normalized for me to grow up with a mom who would wake up in the middle of the night screaming or who would not sleep on a regular bed, traumatized in residential school because bad things happened to her.
The bed. Just trying to make sure that the message of MMIWG to us is out there.
It did something to me that I have never shared. That when I was 5 years old, they cut me here as a five-year-old boy with 17 stitches.
We would like the Pope personally to intervene in the case of a priest. He has a history of sexual abuse in Inuit Nunangat.
I'm not just like this robotic reporter, like it affects me because I have family members who are survivors. And we're all connected by this, right? And so we're all experiencing this together.
I've had people ask me, how do you reconcile, you know, the negative aspects of the history of the Catholic Church with Native peoples? And I tell them that, you know, in my own life, we need to forgive those things and that do not allow anger and hatred to consume us.
And I want to say to you with all my heart, I am very sorry. And I join my brothers, the Canadian bishops.
You know, they tried to take our culture away. They tried to take our laws away. So for us to be practicing our laws right here at Vatican City, like, we're still here, we still have this, that's where I'm like.
And I said, I don't care how much this hurts, because from sports. I have a spinal injury and I have a broken hip. I said, I'm going to dance. So I did.
As far as I understand, just because you give somebody a headdress doesn't necessarily mean that they are being honored. It means that they have a responsibility. It was beautiful to see all the different nations represented that came, and they were proud and still here. I just knew that it was special, and I knew that it was important, and I was grateful because, like my mom, I think for her that was healing for her to come. To be the survivors that are front and center. And it just seems like 4 days in that the purpose of why he's here is getting buried.
And a woman was not to acknowledge the Pope. I did. You weren't supposed to do that? Well, if I don't, then who will? If not now, then when?
Coming to Inuit lands is very important, so that inclusion is it's not just symbolic, it's an important message that he's sending everywhere, that he is willing to go to the ends of the earth, to the high Arctic, to where beautiful people, Inuit, live.
So you need to look at it, with a way to look at things, you know, as reality, is that from day one, they've, you know, their way of doing things is to get rid of us. This is our home. This is our family. What has happened is wrong. It's a sin. It's a crime. And that and they need to be accountable for these things.
And it was really an incredible moment because I saw the impact that it had on them. And to feel their emotion and just see how it actually truly impacted them. It was so powerful because of just our story.
Like our people's communities and families were broken and tore apart. You tear the children from the families and you put the children literally through hell. And that circle, that broken circle is, you know, just, it's reforming. It's a painful process, but it's also a really it's a really beautiful thing too, and that's what I'm seeing.
Bye.
And that's young spirit, the ability to heal. And before that, we were hearing the audio from a trailer from an incredible movie about boarding school experiences. And I hope that I get to see it sometime. Yeah, I'm going to share the news that's been hitting all the news things late, you know, the last couple of days. And that's about Dances with Wolves actor Nathan Chasing Horse. And he was sentenced to life in prison for sexually assaulting Indigenous women and girls. April's, you know, Sexual Awareness Month, so it just seems so appropriate to be reading this. Well, a Nevada judge gave the Dances with Wolves actor his sentence on Monday. A jury had previously convicted him of 13 charges, mostly related to sexual assault. He was accused by three women, including one who was 14 when the assaults began. He was acquitted on some charges. Accusers and their families told Judge Jessica Peterson they continue to suffer from the trauma caused by Chasing Horse and the struggle with their faith after he exploited his position as a spiritual leader. Chasing Horse, wearing his navy blue Clark County Detention Center uniform, stared straight ahead as victims read their statements. He denied the charges against him. Quote, "This is a miscarriage of justice," he told the judge on Monday. The sentencing wraps a year's long effort to prosecute the former actor after he was first arrested and indicted in 2023. That initial arrest reverberated around Indian country with law enforcement in other states and Canada following up with more criminal charges. Those charges are still pending. And the British Columbia Prosecution Service said Chasing Horse was charged with sexual assault in February of 2023, though the date of the alleged offense took place in September 2018 near Kiramayos, a village about 4 hours east of Vancouver. In November of 2023, the case paused due to Chasing Horse's charges in the United States, but resumed the following year. After all of Chasing Horse's appeals have been exhausted, British Columbia prosecutors will assess their next steps. Damien Darby, Communications Counsel for the British Columbia Prosecution Service, said in an email, "A warrant against Chasing Horse remains outstanding in Alberta." The Tsuina Nation Police Service in Alberta said in a statement following Chasing Horse's conviction in January. The Tsuina Nation Police Service said that it is in contact with the Alberta Crown Prosecutor's Office regarding the warrant. Chasing Horse was born on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota, which is home to the Sioux Nation, one of the seven tribes of the Lakota Nation. And following his appearance as the young Sioux tribe member Smiles a Lot in Kevin Costner's Oscar-winning film Dances with Wolves, Chasing Horse traveled across Indian country to attend powwows and perform healing ceremonies. And during his trial, Nevada prosecutors said Chasing Horse used his reputation as a Lakota medicine man to prey on Indigenous women and girls. Deputy District Attorney Bianca Pucci told the jury that for almost 20 years, Chasing Horse, quote, spun a web of abuse that ensnared many women. Jurors heard from three women who said Chasing Horse sexually assaulted them. The jury returned guilty verdicts on some charges related to all three. Multiple victims described how they participated in his ceremonies or went to Chasing Horse for medical help. Corina Leon LaCroix, one of the victims, was 14 in 2012 when Chasing Horse allegedly told her the spirits wanted her to give up her virginity to save her mother, who was diagnosed with cancer. He then sexually assaulted her and told her that if she told anyone, her mother would die, according to Pucci. The sexual assaults continued for years, Pucci said. The Associated Press typically does not use the name of alleged sexual assault victims unless they came forward publicly, as Leon LaCroix has. Chasing Horse denied the allegations, and his attorney questioned the main accuser's credibility, calling her a scorned woman. His attorney had filed a motion for a new trial, arguing that a witness was not qualified to talk about grooming and that the statute of limitations had expired. That motion was denied. And victims and their family members testified that they struggle with their faith as a result of Chasing Horse's actions. The mothers of the victims said Chasing Horse betrayed their trust and abused sacred traditions. Quote, "Even to this day, I struggle to regain my faith and spirituality," a victim's mother said. And one victim said she still faces complications after suffering an ectopic pregnancy as a result of the assault and being forced to undergo surgery. "I'm choosing to see this moment as a fresh start. I will rebuild my life, reclaim my voice, and continue fighting for the future I deserve," one victim said. Dr. Crystal Lee, CEO and founder of the organization United Natives, which offers services to victims of sexual abuse, said she hopes the victims find peace with the sentencing. Lee said Chasing Horse's case shows the importance of holding high-profile perpetrators accountable and believing the victims involved. Chasing Horse used his status as an actor and medicine man to prey on victims, similarly to other faith leaders who abuse their power, Lee said. "I think it makes us question who we trust and why we trust." And I want to share this with you. It's the story of a woman that, you know, was sexually abused working at the Indian Health Services. And she says, and it says, "Last year, Phoenix Johnson came across a news article that made her feel faint. Quote, it was jarring for me," she told Native News Online. "I cried. I felt angry. I also felt vindicated." The article announced Dr. Richard McCath's sentencing for multiple sexual assault convictions. 7 years earlier, Johnson reported that McCath assaulted her at work, an incident in which he was cleared of any wrongdoing and she lost her job. Now she stared at his guilty face in the news, a consequence for the harm he caused other women. Quote, "Seeing his face was a lot harder for me than I expected," she said. "It just kind of sent chills through me." In 2011, Johnson returned to her homeland of Ketchikan, Alaska, to do what many Native people do after spending years away from their community: give back to their tribe. Well, Johnson spent her childhood in Southeast Alaska. She loved hunting, fishing, and being close to her culture. After high school, she served in the Air Force as an aerial combat technician, an aerial surveillance instructor, and later taught suicide intervention skills. In 2011, she moved with her daughter to Ketchikan. Quote, "I felt like I'm going home to what I know is safe," she said. "Home is safe." Ketchikan is located in the Alexander Archipelago in a lower curve of Alaska's panhandle. The town is enveloped by the temperate rainforest of the Tongass National Forest and hugs the shores of the Tongass Narrows. In population of about 8,000 residents, residents depends largely on tourism dollars, with more than 1 million tourists visiting each year via cruise ships to take in the area's Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures and the world-renowned salmon industry. Johnson was thrilled at the prospect of building a culture foundation for her daughter. In 2012, she started to work as a lab technician, the first step toward a career in medicine. What was supposed to be a new beginning turned into a nightmare that drove her away from her tribal home. And according to documents obtained by Native News Online, in 2010, Dr. Richard McGarth was issued a license to practice osteopathic medicine in the state of Alaska. And by 2012, he was supervising the tribal health clinic lab in the Ketchikan Indian community. Johnson worked in the lab for a couple of weeks when McCath began touching her, grazing her with his pelvis as he walked by, touching her breast for a moment when reaching for supplies, playing with her hair, lingering his hands in her neck and shoulders. And like many women in her situation, Johnson initially doubted the instincts that told her the behavior was inappropriate. In March of 2012, during a conversation, McGarth slapped Johnson's buttocks. Later that day, she filed a complaint with the Tribal Human Resources Department, then submitted more documentation of inappropriate conduct. HR said they would investigate as Johnson waited. A month later, Johnson received an official notification that the investigation determined no verifiable sexual harassment occurred, and the notification brushed off the butt slap as intended for her back. Johnson immediately filed a grievance in response. Days later, she was fired and escorted from the lab. It was an almost indescribable, horrific feeling of being treated like a criminal after being traumatized sexually. Now out of work, she faced a loss of income as a single woman. My dread, my sadness is hard to put into words. And then came the rumors. Native American women experienced the highest rates of sexual assault of any other demographic. And one in three victims reports their assaults with Native victims. The numbers less likely, according to Strongheart's Native Helpline, a domestic violence hotline for Native Americans. There is a perception that nothing will happen, Rachel Carr sunk Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. Strongheart's deputy executive officer told Native News Online. And according to the Department of Justice, 98% of sexual assaults reported to law enforcement don't result in arrests, convictions, or any level of accountability. Met with the jurisdictional confusion and apathy that drives low convictions in Indian country, Native American survivors might feel especially discouraged. And after Johnson was fired, word quickly spread through the town that she had a romantic relationship with McGrath. Quote, "The rumor that I was a harlot," she said. "I was a 26-year-old single mom, honorably discharged. I came home to be part of my own culture as part of my identity reclamation journey. The only thing that came out of it was gossip that I had a thing with a 60-plus-year-old white man who was a predator. It was so destabilizing." And there's more to it, but you understand what happened to this woman. And so many Native women are just not sexually assaulted. They go missing. And next Tuesday, May 5th, besides Cinco de Mayo, it's Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Day. And wear red. And because of that, I'm going to close with this.
Hey, 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 hey
high class in turn, I call your name.
This has been a KMite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.